Next case is 05193 and 415, Mary Hedges versus Nationwide Mutual Insurance Company. Mr. Blackburn.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. The car parked in the street belongs to the man in the bank. Simple sentence, simple grammatical construction. I'd venture to guess that almost every adult who understands English that reads that sentence could tell you the man is in the bank and the car is on the street. But the court, this court in the Moore case, when it said if you take a sentence with that simple grammatical construction and you put it in a statute, we don't know what it means, that it's ambiguous. Because we don't know when we read that in a statute whether the car is in the bank or the man is in the bank. How did the Moore court arrive at that conclusion? It ignored the rules of grammar. Basic to our understanding of the English language, basic to the way we communicate. Probably most people couldn't explain the rules of grammar, couldn't give you clear definitions if they were asked, what is this rule or what is that rule? But most people who are educated understand the rules of grammar, and that's how or why they can interpret that simple sentence and understand it, and it's not ambiguous. The Moore court also ignored a specific statutory rule that said when you interpret a statute, you apply the rules of grammar. The Moore court did not do that. The Moore court took a statute, RC 3937.18, an uninsured motorist statute, providing uninsured motorist coverage. And the Moore court said, basically, if that statute provides damages from owners or operators of an uninsured motor vehicle because of bodily injury sustained or suffered by an insured, we don't know what that means. Because we don't know if that suffered by an insured identifies damages or identifies bodily injury. The rules of grammar tells you that that ending, suffered by an insured, modifies the phrase or antecedent preceding it, which is bodily injury. Moreover, if you take out that suffered by an injury, if you take out that suffered by an insured, it becomes the exact same way that the case in Sexton had interpreted. What happened in Sexton case, and this is kind of as a guide to what the court in Moore did, the court in Sexton had a statute or a policy of insurance which said it provides coverage for those insureds legally entitled to recover damages from the owner or operator of an uninsured motor vehicle because of bodily injury sustained by an insured. The court in Sexton said, we know what sustained by an insured means. It modifies bodily injury. And it says that policy requires bodily injury by the insured in order to be covered under the uninsured motorist provisions of that policy. Sexton said, well, you can't do that because the statute won't let you. Moore comes along, exact same construction, exact same policy language, and says now suffered or sustained by an insured, we don't know if it modifies a bodily injury or we don't know if it modifies damages. Interestingly enough, though, Moore said, if you put that language in a policy of insurance, though, we know what it means, because they concluded that the policy of insurance that Moore was interpreting, which had almost the exact identical language, required the insured to be injured, to sustain bodily injury. So they said, when I read that policy, sustained bodily injury or suffered bodily injury by the insured, it means the insured must suffer bodily injury. That's what the policy means. They used the rules of grammar. Then they looked at the same language or identical language, identical construction in the statute and said, now we don't know what it means. And reached the conclusion that the policy at issue in that case required bodily injury to be sustained by the insured. But the statute, which had the identical construction, was ambiguous. We don't know what it means. In this case, there's almost identical policy language. Different statute now. The court, the General Assembly amended the statute. So it's different than the statute that was addressed in Moore. And there is a difference. In our statute, they put in suffered by such insureds. In the Moore statute, it was suffered by such persons. If you do not put, if you take out suffered by such insureds, what does that statute tell you? It says we are required to provide uninsurance. The coverage is required to be provided to persons insured. So who is the coverage for? Persons insured. Under the policy for loss due to bodily injury or death. If you stop right there, the coverage is for insureds. Why would you add suffered by such insureds unless it identifies bodily injury? It limits the type of coverage that we're providing. And that's exactly what the statute did. There'd be no reason for adding that word language, such insureds, unless you were limiting it, the bodily injury, to the insured. The Moore case, if one follows the Moore case, one could never know the meaning of a statute. Because what Moore basically tells you is we have to look at every statute because we have to define, we have to decide. The court has to decide the meaning of this. The General Assembly doesn't know the meaning. The general public doesn't know the meaning because it could mean anything. We could take this phrase over here and we could say it modifies the phrase at the beginning or it modifies a phrase in the beginning, in the middle, or it modifies the phrase right before it. But we have to decide that. It makes writing contracts, writing statutes, communications impracticable, unworkable. You just can't do it at that point in time because every time there was a change in a statutory section or a statutory code, we'd have to run to the court to see what it means. Because you could say, well, it's clear, it means X. And someone can say, well, no, because I could take that sentence and that modifier and I could say, no, it modifies this way over here, so let's go to court and see what it says. Moore is unworkable. Moore was wrongly decided. I mean, if you look at the rules of grammar were crystal clear in that case. Moore, I submit, should be overruled because it is unworkable. It makes it almost impossible to draft.
If we don't want to overrule Moore, what's your second argument?
Limit Moore. My second argument would be limit Moore to the statute. It's statutory specific. It deals with a specific statute. The statute was amended when our case came along. There was a change in statutory language. The statutory language added such insureds, which identifies those insureds that had to sustain bodily injury. It didn't need to put that word such insureds in there because the coverage was already provided for insureds. For damages, for bodily injury, suffered by such insureds. Such insureds identifies those people who have to suffer the damage, the bodily injury in order to be covered. So Moore is clearly limited. The statute is different in this case. The statute that we have rectified or fixed or remedied the Moore decision.
House Bill 261 was adopted before or after Moore affected?
261 affected. Was adopted prior to the Moore decision. There'd be no undue hardship on anyone if the Moore case were overruled. The statute, just as in this court's decision in Gladys, the statute has been changed several times. And that was one of the issues involved in the Gladys case, is that there would be no undue hardship if the rule was changed because the statute had been changed so many times. There was no one that was going to rely upon the old version of the statute any longer. In this case, the issue is whether or not Moore is applicable to the version of the statute that is at issue in this case. And I submit that it is not because of the language. But I also submit that Moore is unworkable. It's impracticable. It needs to be overruled or at least limited in this case, or else we will be back to this court on every single interpretation of every single policy that's written. And I'd like to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Blackburn. Ms. Phillips.
Thank you, Your Honors. Mr. Blackburn, may it please this court, I submit to you that Moore was not wrongly decided, and I will get to that argument in just a minute, but I would like to take Mr. Blackburn's arguments in reverse. He says this statute has changed, that House Bill 261 changed its language, and therefore Moore is not applicable. That argument is fallacious just as well. Specifically, if you look at Section A of 393718, the word that he refers to is persons at the end of that paragraph, just before the colon, being changed to the word insureds. But if you look at subsection A talks about how much insurance is to be provided when any policy of auto liability insurance is issued in this state. Now, the coverages that are to be included are actually talked about in subsection 1. And the reason that we know that is because in section A, the word following is used. So if we want to get into the rules of grammar, and I want to bring my blackboard up here and diagram paragraph A for you, it's going to say certain coverages must be issued along with auto liability insurance, and the policy may not be issued unless both of the following coverages. That word following means let's look to subsection 1 to see what coverages we're talking about. Well, by golly, in subsection 1, the word persons was not substituted with the word insureds. So substituting the word persons with the word insureds in section A really has no significance when you're trying to describe the coverages that are to be allowed. The coverages are described in subsection 1 of section A. And in subsection 1, the bases for coverages are actually expanded. In the older statute interpreted by Moore, it was injury or death. In the newer statute that must be interpreted here, it's injury, sickness, or disease, including death. So they've expanded the bases for coverages, not restricted it. So to say now that this changed language, this one word, has made this statute clearer, I think probably is certainly not the case. If anything, it's made it more confusing. Now, with respect to the rules of grammar argument, with all due respect to the bench as it sits here today, only three of you participated in the Moore decision. The majority, which was joined by Justice Pfeiffer, indicated that the words damages and loss were very important, and that if you adopted the insurer's position in Moore and eliminated those words, it would be exactly what they were looking for. And the majority said you can't do that. You can't ignore the words loss and damages. Just as the dissenters in that particular case, which were Justice Stratton, Justice Moyer, they said you can't ignore these other phrases for bodily injury, suffered bodily injury. And if you ignore those, then you've not done justice to the statute. And that's precisely why the court found it ambiguous, because there were two plausible versions of the statute to be interpreted. Those words, losses and damages, were not erased from this statute that's being interpreted in this particular instance. So I submit to you that the analysis that you must undertake now is precisely the same analysis that this bench had to undertake in Moore. And albeit while only three of you participated in that decision, to say that the majority of the justices in that case did not understand the rules of grammar or common usage of the words contained therein, I'm not prepared to say they didn't understand that. I dare say that their education was highly as sufficient and sophisticated as the educations of the dissenters in that particular case.
The justices were willing to say that, weren't we?
What you said
no
was
need to answer.
It depended upon.
It just shows you that there is a difference of opinion.
Exactly.
On the antecedent rule and
which exactly
seemed to be pretty well established.
Well, antecedent means prior, what comes prior. So if we look at this statute and we now want to focus on what Section A really says, and you focus on that word following, following means after. Just like antecedent means before, following means after. Following means we're going to describe the coverages in the after provision, which is subsection 1, which was not changed in that word person substituted with insureds. So you know, it would be very nice if we could reach up there to that shelf and the legislature or the LSC staffers were able to pull down that book that says rules of grammar for writing statutory provisions, but it doesn't do that. In this particular instance, the statute has significantly remained the same relative to the analysis that was performed in Moore. The court at that particular time and the justices sitting there with their understanding of what the rules of grammar were and the common usage of those words, there was a, as you indicate, there was a dispute. Obviously, if this court with its high intellect sees that this language is disputable and there are two plausible explanations for how it can be interpreted, it has to be ambiguous. There's no additional clarity given to the statute by changing and substituting that one word in Section A of the new statute, which is being interpreted here. You cannot now say that Moore was wrongly decided when the dispute remains. Now, Attorney Blackburn indicates that there will be no practical hardship on anybody if that occurs. Well, I think the practical hardship in effect would come to the doctrine of stare decisis, which this court has repeatedly pronounced it adheres to. To say that we now believe that rules of grammar and common usage is different than it was when Moore decided certainly cannot be the case. There's no authority that you can go to for that. There's no authorities that have been decided since Moore to say that rules of grammar are X, and now we see that the majority in Moore was wrong. That certainly is not at issue for this particular court because there's nothing that's been put before you to say the rules of grammar have changed. There are no set rules of grammar. The dissent opinion, which is essentially in Moore, which is essentially what Nationwide has adopted in this particular case, actually relied on Carter, which was a 1946 case, for that particular rule. Rules of grammar and common usage must be used in interpreting statute. In 1946, I dare say that the rules of grammar were somewhat different than they are today. Our legislature has changed, our society has changed, our General Assembly is made up from people from all walks of life, ethnic origins, and backgrounds. It's now common practice to use slang, prepositional phrases, split infinities.
Should we adopt that as a standard here? We don't have any permanent rules of grammar, sentence structure, how to interpret statutes. You're not arguing that.
No, I'm saying there is no
flow with whatever the common usage of the language is on the street.
And I think common usage is certainly a much more appropriate test, Your Honor, absolutely. I mean, there is no book, Rules of Grammar. You know, the rules of grammar that were taught to you in your grade school and high school are probably different than the rules of grammar that were taught to myself or Attorney Blackburn, all of them being perfectly sufficient. I'm not saying that there should be some malleable test, but common usage of the language. And if there is a dispute amongst the members of this bench as to common usage of the language, obviously there's an ambiguity. And that ambiguity existed in Moore. To say that the majority opinion in Moore was incorrect, now when there's been nothing presented to you to suggest that it is, there's no basis for overruling Moore. So you have to revert back to the alternative argument that you asked Attorney Blackburn about. If you don't overrule Moore, what are you left with? What you're left with is a substitution of that single word in the new statute that's being analyzed here, the substitution of insureds for persons. That's in paragraph A, which does nothing to describe coverages because the coverages, according to the very word used in the statute, is following in subsection 1. And in subsection 1, those words were not substituted, insureds was not substituted for persons, and the bases for coverage were actually expanded to include things more than just bodily injury and death. Now it's bodily injury, sickness, illness, and death. So it's actually more expansive.
Why would it not be a fair reading of that change, and as you say properly, one word, insureds, that the General Assembly is attempting from persons to insured. Insured seems to me to be a more confined term than person. Persons can include anyone. Insureds obviously includes persons who have signed a contract for insurance, and they have certain rights under that contract.
Again, what we're talking about, Your Honor, is in paragraph A, and paragraph A talks about what the requirements are for delivery or issuance of a liability policy of insurance in this state. It's not talking about the coverages that are available in that policy. That's what's described in subsection 1, pursuant to the very language of paragraph A, which says the following coverages. They must include the following coverages. The following coverages are found in subsection 1 of section A. And in subsection 1, persons is not replaced by the word insureds. In fact, it says any person insured under the policy. It remains identical to the version that was interpreted in Moore. The words loss, damages remain just as those words remained in Moore, which gave fits to the interpretation of the statute. There are no significant changes to this particular statute relative to the coverage issue and the description of coverages that are to be provided to the insured or any person insured under the policy.
The argument is if the General Assembly really wanted to make a change, it should have changed the last words in one.
Absolutely. They should have made it consistent, Your Honor. If they believe that changing that word insured persons to insurers in paragraph A, if their intent was to make it to limit it and make it consistent, why didn't they change the word persons everywhere else that it appears in the statute? They didn't do that. That wasn't their intent, because if it truly was, they would have focused on that word. They would have used their search, replace, and find on their word processor, and they would have replaced every time persons appears with the word insured. And they didn't do that. They also had the option of expressly superseding the holding in Sexton, and they didn't do that. The reason that the only appellate court in this state found contrary to the opinion of Moore and the applicability of Moore to 261 is because they relied on Giant Eagle, which was a federal case, and Giant Eagle was flawed in its reasoning because Giant Eagle said that obviously the General Assembly in Ohio, in enacting House Bill 261, was reacting to Moore. They relied upon that in issuing their opinion. Well, obviously that was flawed because 261 was enacted in 1997. Moore wasn't decided until 2000. It couldn't have been a response to Moore. But that was the basis in their reliance upon issuing their opinion. Cincinnati versus Wells, which is the only district out of the second district that has followed that reasoning and which is in conflict with the six other appellate courts that have addressed this issue, relied on Giant Eagle. And they relied on the same argument that Mr. Blackburn has made, the substitution of the word persons for insureds in paragraph A where it has no significance. So far, as I've indicated in my brief, there are seven courts that have addressed this issue. Six have found that Moore applies. And to be perfectly honest, three of those six actually dealt with the subsequent version beyond 261 of 393718, which essentially remained unchanged. But they found that that language absolutely is more as applicable to the language in those particular statutes, and not until the General Assembly enacted the later statute that expressly superseded the holdings of Sexton and Moore could you say that this particular statute limits coverage. I'll reserve any remaining time that I might have for any further rebuttal unless there are further questions.
Thank you, Ms. I don't think you have any rebuttal coming, so just so you don't expect it. Thank you, Ms. Phillips. Mr. Blackburn, you've saved about a little more than five minutes of your time.
Thank you, Your Honor. First of all, look at the fact that the change in the language, such persons, was only used in paragraph A and not subsection 1. It is significant. It's significant because paragraph A says we're going to describe the coverages that you have to provide, that you must provide under the statute. And paragraph A says the coverage that you must provide is coverage to persons insured under the policy for loss due to bodily injury or death. And if you stop right there, it says provide coverages for insureds under the policy for loss due to bodily injury or death. They added suffered by such insureds as opposed to such persons, because bodily injury must be suffered by the insureds. Now you go on to subsection 1.
Is it the bodily injury that must be suffered or the loss that must be suffered?
In this case, it's the bodily injury. Applying rules of grammar, it's bodily injury that must be suffered by such insureds. Otherwise, there'd be no need to put in there suffered by such insureds, because the coverage is provided to insureds. Mm-hmm. So if you're providing coverage to the insureds for loss due to bodily injury, why add insureds unless you're limiting the bodily injury, that it must be suffered by such insureds? And it says that is the type of coverage that we want you to put in to subsection 1. And that was what they put in there. The intent, significantly in that same statute, the General Assembly changed subsection J, and this was cited in Appellee's brief. They didn't cite J, but they cited 3937.18I1, which they referenced it as A1, but they also referenced RC 3937.18, and we were looking at Senate Bill 97 and Senate Bill 20, respectively, and they make a distinction about what you could have done and how you could remedy it. And that section talks about bodily injury suffered by an insured. Well, in House Bill 261, in J, an analogous section, the General Assembly put coverages suffered offered under Division A of this section. And that's what we're looking at, Division A of this section. may include terms and conditions that preclude coverage for bodily injury or death suffered by an insured. The intent of the statute was that this bodily injury must be suffered by an insured. Regarding the statement by Ms. Phillips that only two plausible interpretations, and if there is two plausible interpretations, then the statute is ambiguous. Well, there's only two plausible interpretations if you ignore the rules of grammar. The car on the street belongs to the man in the bank. If I ignore the rules of grammar, I can say I don't know what that means. But if I follow the rules of grammar, I know exactly what that means. I know that it's the man in the bank and the car is on the street. Statute requires the following of the rules of grammar. There was some discussion about rules of grammar have changed. Rules of grammar have not changed in regard to interpreting that simple sentence.
Well, counsel, I think you demean and oversimplify the job of the court in insurance cases a lot. I've sat here and listened to it, and you're entitled to do that. But in Moore, the court was interpreting a new statute and whether or not the legislature had overruled Sexton. Now, Sexton's an old case, 1982 case, decided before any of the members of the court that were deciding Moore were on the court. But it's not as uncomplicated as saying the car's on the street and the man's in the bank.
I apologize if I'm oversimplifying it, Your Honor. I do believe, though, that when you're looking at sentence construction, the two sentences, the simple sentence that I've used as an example, and the statutory language that was adopted by the General Assembly, have the same identical construction. And I think if you look at the Moore case, it used that construction. It looked at that identical construction in the policy it was interpreting, and it said that policy, the way it is written, requires bodily injury to be sustained by an insured before the insured is entitled to uninsured motorist coverage. The statute had the exact same construction, almost literally word for word, but yet the court said in the statute that's not the case, it's ambiguous. And my only argument is I submit it was not ambiguous. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.